Listen. You can hear the screaming. Three children are trapped in an elevator with Bobby Joe McCann. Listen. Thin, bespectacled Harold Smith prowls the animal shelter, a tire iron clutched in his bloody fist.
Shut up, you mutt!
Listen. Maud Carillon sits at her desk by the empty gasoline can and the box of matches. She screams with laughter as the flame devours the geriatric ward.
The Sandman. Sound and Fury.
Listen. You can hear sobbing. On the freeway, helpless weeping comes from the crash sculpture of twisted, blistered metal, burning rubber, shattered glass. Listen.
Lord! Lord! Why have you abandoned us?
In the streets of New York, a group of fundamentalists know that this is the Armageddon. And they are still here, trapped on the earth. Bereft of the rapture, they weep for their abandonment by a suddenly distant God. Listen.
911, what's your emergency? 911, what is your emergency?
911, what is your emergency? Yes, ma'am. Your building is on fire.
911, what is your emergency?
911, what is your emergency?
In the radio room, Nan Fowler knows she has no more ambulances to send, and the calls just won't stop coming in. Listen to the anguish of a world in which the bad things are coming out of the dark places. Listen to a world in pain. Listen. You can hear it. The ruby was created a long time ago, made by the ruler of the dreaming out of his substance. Powered by his spirit, the ruby was used to manipulate the fabric of his world. This was long ago. How long ago? Have you ever wondered what the planet Earth dreamed of in the early days? Back when it was cooling from a molten state, long before a thin crust had formed on its surface, let alone an atmosphere. It was back then, long ago. The Dream Lord came to rely on the ruby for even the simplest manipulations of the dreaming. Tools can be the subtlest of traps. When he lost the stone, on the occasion of his imprisonment, he lost much of his power. Eventually, he found his ruby again, but found it warped and changed. Instead of focusing and enhancing his energies, it began to absorb them. It left him weak and, literally, drained. He lay helpless and less than fully conscious. He could feel far away the disruptions in the dreaming, the distortion and the pain. It took him more than a day to regain any strength. And then, incarnate, he walked the mile to where the ruby sat, whispering its message of pain and madness to the world. And he saw the ruby, and he saw its new master, and he said,
"What do you think you are doing?"
"What does it look like I'm doing?"
"I've sent my little ruby into their deepest dreams to dredge up the blackness from their souls."
It is 11 a.m. at the all-night diner in Mayhew, Delaware. Outside, the town is unnaturally quiet for this time of day. Like the rest of humanity, its inhabitants, those who have survived the night, that is, are lost in nightmares. A burned-out car is on its roof somewhere up the street. Inside the diner, wide awake and surrounded by corpses, sits the author of this horror, the skeletal, lank-haired figure of Dr. D, escapee from Arkham Asylum for the Criminally Insane. Before him stands the owner of that stone, a tall, black-robed figure with chalk-white skin, a shock of black hair, and eyes that shine like stars. The Lord of Dreams. On the blood-smeared counter between them are two items. An amulet made from what could be a human eyeball, and a large red gemstone on a chain.
I'm hurting them all. I'm driving them all mad.
You are using the Dreamstone to do that? Why?
Revenge, possibly. That and dreams of power. In the beginning, I thought I'd tell them I was doing this and they'd make me ruler of the world if I stopped. But it's so much fun! I don't want to stop! Death takes all a day. Death takes all a day. I think I'll dismember the world and then I'll dance in the wreckage. Oh, she's so clever. My clever baby.
Listen to me. I made that dreamstone, created it from the fabric of my being long ago, when I and my siblings were young. I wrenched it from myself at the dawn of time. Powered by my spirit, it was made to manipulate the fabric of dreams, of the world I rule. It was not made for this. You must stop. If you reverse what you have done to the jewel, then let me use its energies to repair the damage you have done to the world. The ruby contains too much of me, of my power, in its fabric. It stole more when I tried to use it. You have robbed me of it. I cannot use it, and I am no longer strong enough to repair the havoc alone. Can you not see what you are doing? You must listen.
Yours? Oh, your soul is the fire in the heart of my jewel. It's your stolen power I've been using all these years. Yes, I see. Very well.
You will repair it then. Give back control of it to me. You will return it.
Give my baby to you? No. Don't be stupid. I'm gonna kill you.
Kill me? With the power of my own ruby?
Yes.
Perhaps he could. The ruby exacts a toll when it is used. Perhaps it has absorbed too much of my soul stuff down the millennia. If you would fight me, mortal, you will not find me unprepared, nor garbed for less than battle.
The Lord of Dreams puts on his helmet. Its elongated insectoid shape, the ovoid glass eyepieces, and its bony corrugated snout render him inhuman, monstrous.
And you shall not do it here.
He raises his arm and draws a rectangle of light in the air behind him. A portal appears in the void, a gateway to his domain, incongruous, hanging in the middle of the diner.
If you would steal a Dream Lord's power, then you shall do it in the Dream Lord's realm. In dreams.
The doorway contracts, and he is gone.
Coward! Cowardy, cowardy custard! Stick your head in the mustard! Break you! Suck you up! Spit you out! Bastard!
Dr. D picks up the ruby, the Dreamstone.
Now, my beloved, follow him. Take me into dreams, my darling. Do you hear me? Now!
Listen.
Yes. Yes.
To the sounds Barbara Wong makes as she slices the pretty pictures out of her flesh. Listen.
No. No.
To the noise homeless Joey Campbell makes as the oven cleaner consumes his face, burns out his eyes. To the happy laughter of the little children in teddy bear t-shirts who sprayed him with it. Listen. Listen to the rushing rivers of blood flowing downwards in a warm torrent.
I can't stop the bleeding.
The blood of the weak.
You severed the artery.
Of the helpless. Of the mad. Listen. You can hear it.
Where have you brought me, faithful Dreamstone? We are in a closet? A wardrobe?
Hail Caesar! Hail Caesar! Hail Caesar!
Pursuing the Lord of Dreams into his realm is not a straightforward proposition. Dee falls out of a wardrobe to find himself in what looks to be ancient Rome. He is attired in an emperor's armor, his head adorned with laurel leaves, the ruby around his neck. Three identical women greet him. They have familiar faces, but he cannot place them.
May all your dreams come true.
Dreams? I had a dream that I was raping my mother. What does that mean, soothsayer?
It means that you will rule the world, Caesar, our universal mother.
Ah, I see. Good. Yes, that's it.
No, that's not it at all. It doesn't mean anything. Nothing more than this.
You had a dream about raping your mother.
A tale told by an idiot. Full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
Now the voice of his mother, Ethel Dee, swirls about him.
You had what? Johnny Dee, I wish to God I'd strangled you at birth.
Don't say that, Mama. It was only a dream. I didn't really mean it.
The soothsayers melt into two figures in black robes. Each wears the helm of the Lord of Dreams.
Beware the ideas of March.
No, it's not that. What is it? Beware the March of Ideas? No.
Now they wear beehive wigs with lightning bolts woven into them.
Beware the brides of Frankenstein.
No! No! Stay back! Go away!
They've gone. You did that.
My ruby. I know you. God, this is a dream. I'm in the dreaming. And I remember why I'm here. I'm here to kill you, Dream Lord. To take this kingdom as my own. I hold your stolen power in my hands! All of it! I think I'm going to like it here.
The dreaming is filled with associative potential unique to each individual who traverses its myriad locations. Dreamers can move from ancient Rome to an infinite supermarket in the time it takes to roll over while asleep. Dee flies in, hovering over an aisle, his face now just shreds of rotting flesh sticking to a skull. He is out for blood. Light drips from the ruby like drips of blood. He lands.
Where are you? Show yourself! I'm gonna suck your blasted life out, swine scum! You can't hide from me forever!
And 100 million sleepers stir uneasily in their slumber.
Can you see me, stinkered lord of piss and mire? Look! Can you see me using your power to rip your ragtag dream world apart? Can you see me?
His hand clutches the ruby, the shape of which is beginning to change. It is less faceted more organic, like a lump of raw and bleeding liver. All around him, wreckage and rubble is drawn upwards towards the power, and those sleeping all over the world scream and whimper and moan. They thrash and call out as if caught in the darkest of nightmares. And in dreams, John Dee spews his hate and laughter onto the emerald winds. Eve stares out from her cave at the erupting dreamscape.
Here, Matthew.
Her raven caws unkindly at the havoc.
Hush.
Come to me, you ragshag lord of nowhere at all!
In the realm of the Lord of Dreams, the explosions and quakes and lights send the keepers of the stories scurrying for cover. Their monsters hide with them, under the bed.
Damn you, Abel. Keep that little gargoyle still. There's precious little enough room under here, and something keeps moving this damn bed. Pain? It's not us. It's Gregory. Gregory's under here, too. Shift over, you brute.
Watch me! I'll rupture your ramshackle land and piss in the ruins! Come to me, you spineless, spittle-arsed, poxy-pale wanker!
In the Garden of Forking Ways walks Dream's brother Destiny, the stoic, hooded figure who carries and is chained to the Book of Everything, walking these paths for eternity. But Destiny finds himself, perhaps for the first time, hesitant to turn to the next page in his book.
This is so good. Oh, Mother, if you can only see me now.
If Ethel Dee could see him now, she would not see the face of the child who reminded her so much of Roderick Burgess, his father. She would see little more than an animated skull.
Watch me, dream puker! Do you want to know what I'll do next?
A doorway manifests itself in front of Dr. D. The Lord of Dreams walks out of it. His posture is slumped, defeated.
Stop! Enough. I am here, D. Desist.
Yes. You're here. Hello.
Dee holds up the pulsating ruby.
This lovely thing is yours, isn't it? It contains your life, your magic, your power, right?
Right.
And the last time you used it, it sucked out more? Yes? Yes?
Dee, stop. You are hurting the dreamers. You are tampering with the order of things.
Shut up! Shut up, shut up, shut up! I'm gonna take all of it. All your life, every bit. Watch me!
Dee holds out the ruby in his hand, extending it towards its former master. Morpheus falls to his knees, a blinding beam of red light passing between himself and the stone.
Does that hurt?
Stop.
Does it? I bet it hurts. I bet it hurts a lot. What does it feel like to have the life sucked out of you? Tell me! I wanna know! Get away from me! I hold your life in my hands! I can kill you! I can end your life! This is your life, Dream Sneak!
Dream fights to get back to his feet.
And I'm crushing it out with my hands! I did it. I killed him. Whoever he was. Whatever it was. It's dead. The ruby. The ruby's gone, too. I feel so strange. I feel different. So, now I rule the dreaming. I will hide in dreams. I will never go back, never leave here for the real world where people hurt you, where they don't care, where they die when you still need them. I will be a wise and tolerant monarch, dispensing justice fairly and only setting nightmares to rip out the minds of the evil and wicked. Or anybody I don't like. I'm the king of dreams of everything! But it's funny. I always thought when I became king, I thought there would be applause. I thought somebody would say something.
Thank you, John D.
Dr. D is not alone. He stands, naked and tiny, in Dream's giant outstretched palm. Morpheus's face looms hugely over him. It looks refreshed, younger, and mildly quizzical.
It has been so long. I had forgotten. I had forgotten how much of my power I had placed in that duel. How much of it was denied to me.
I thought I killed you.
What are you going to do to me?
I'm not sure. You have pretended to power not yours, wreaked havoc in my realm, inflicted pain upon my person. For that, you should be punished. But you destroyed the ruby, my dreamstone. I doubt I would have thought of that. Destroying it, you released the power stored in it. My control of the dreaming. It's all mine again. It feels good.
Oh, are you going to kill me?
I could do. Perhaps I will.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't doubt it. Not that it matters. You should never have used my ruby. It was not made for mortals. The damage to your mind must have been considerable.
You mean after what I did? You aren't going to do anything?
Of course I'm going to do something, John D. I'm taking you home.
Dream raises his arm and once more draws a rectangle in the air behind him. A portal appears in the void, a gateway to a place all too familiar to Dr. D.
No, please.
This way.
I know where my cell is.
Boo!
Scarecrow!
Oh! Sorry. Hang on. I'm afraid I can't see a thing without my spectacles.
The Scarecrow pulls off his burlap face mask and puts on a pair of eyeglasses.
Good Lord! It is you, Doctor. I was afraid that you might not be coming back to Arkham. And you've brought a friend.
I am not staying.
I told you that you'd come back. We always come back. It is a comfort in wretchedness to have companions in woe. That's by Marlowe from Faust. Of course, he was talking about hell, but it applies equally to Arkham.
There's no place like home, Professor Crane.
Exactly. Be it never so humble, nor in this case full of hateful thugs hell-bent on frying your brain with their drugs and shocks.
Or are you escaping again?
Me? Oh, no. I can't go to sleep in my cell. There's a rat in there. I'm frightened of rats.
I'm sure you can share this one with Dr. D.
Goodbye. I think I'm sorry about what I did. You know, sorry.
Sleep well, John D.
I don't sleep.
Perhaps you will tonight.
But listen, it's so horrible here. All the screaming the last few days. Mr. Dent tried to strangle himself. It's been so mad. Quite terrifying. It's never quiet here, not even at night. There's always someone crying, someone calling out, someone in the next cell banging their head against the wall, banging and banging and banging. Fear of noise. Let me see. Latin, strepens, noisy. Strepentophobia, perhaps.
Go back to your bed, Jonathan Crane. Go to sleep. I have a castle to rebuild, a world to reclaim. But tonight, at least, tonight, humanity will sleep in peace.
Oh, so tired.
My sainted aunt, have I become a victim of brain fever? The curse of academia? Mr. Crane, I fear you have been having an hallucination.
As fast as they dawned, the crazy times are over. Nan Fowler is asleep on her desk. She's breathing slowly, deeply. The patients brought in that day to the hospitals, cut and smashed and broken, all sleep like angels, needing no morphine. They breathe in, out, in unbroken and quiet rhythm. And in bedlam, John D. sleeps without dreaming, but his sleep is sound and restful. Silence washes like a river over Arkham. No sounds of screaming, no sobbing, no noises of pain or madness. Just peace. The only noise is the gentle, even cadence of people asleep. In, out, in, out. Listen.